Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for having us at Renewable Talk. Really enjoyed it. Before we joined the Conservancy, I did know that. Let me turn it on. Is that better? Right, I'm probably far too loud. Can we turn down the volume somehow? I tend to automatically talk loudly when the audience is so far away.
I don't know how often you do this.
I think I'll just move the microphone further down on my shirt.
That's probably a little bit better, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah, okay, good. Hopefully it's going to be recorded. Are we recording this? Right, please. So you say. Okay, so I'm going to be talking about SAMR4 status, sort of what's happened in the last year and what might be happening in the upcoming year. And, it's a very interesting talk by Randy, that before we joined the Software Freedom Conservancy, I did a lot of the enforcement along with the Snowstorm Studies, also helped out the legal issues. And it is an area that is very important for SAMR, because I think the GDL is what allowed this project to go from being a one-man toy project to being something that is a decent project today with lots of features. The GDL provides that little nudge to managers, that when a manager in a company thinks, ooh, maybe we're the ones that will get away with taking everything but not giving back. And the GDL provides that little nudge to say, well, no, you're not really supposed to do that. You really are supposed to become part of the community and contribute. Anyway, that's not what my talk is about today. I'm talking technical today. And for some reason, the slides aren't advancing on here. My screen here, my screen up there, are completely different. I have no idea why. So I'll try to make sure I look up here. So it's been a fantastic year for SAMR development. The highlights in the last year from my point of view, and I tend to focus on particular areas of SAMR. So my particular focus in the last year has been on trying to get SAMR 4 out the door. Which means, in some ways, you could say it's a terrible year because I failed. And SAMR 4 developers, we really wanted to get 4.0 released for this SAMR XP conference. This time last year, we were saying we swear we'll get it out in time. We didn't. So in some ways, we failed. We have got a lot closer. And luckily, some people have been brave enough to ignore the alpha status of SAMR 4 and are using it in production. I'm not sure if there's how many production users of SAMR 4 are there here in the audience. I wouldn't expect very many. Yes. Well, myself, of course, but I've got a fairly small group of users, so my wife and myself have got a small group. But there are far more production SAMR 4 users in the world this year than there were last year, which is great. Anyway, the highlights in terms of technical development that I've been working on myself, the big one we were focusing on was read-only domain controller support. And for those of you who don't know, in Active Directory you have the concept of a domain, you have domain controllers in the domain, and they're the machines that rule the domain. They're the ones that hold the directory, hold the information about your users and your groups. Being able to have a domain controller that is read-only, that is effectively a cache for the rest of your domain, is really important for large deployments. And it's really the ideal setup when you've got, say, a branch office. And in that branch office, you want to have a domain controller to allow all of your users to authenticate against the domain. But you don't want to fully trust the machine that is running that domain controller. But you do want it to automatically synchronize information down from the rest of your enterprise. And that was the key feature we were aiming for, to get one of the key features in the last year. And we have achieved that. We now have read-only domain control support in SAMR 4. So in that way, that was a huge success. The next big one was Mine9 integration. I'll be talking about that. So that's integration, which I don't know what integration is, but we've got Mine9 integration now in SAMR. And I'll talk about that more later in my talk, but it's a fairly important part because it was the biggest pain point for people deploying SAMR 4 up till now. The DNS part of SAMR was really painful. The auto-build commit system has made things much nicer for developers. I hope that the developers in the audience, many of them, would find life a lot easier now with auto-build, and I'll talk a bit more about that later. Wind test is another one that I don't think has got as much attention as it should have. And WinTest is an automatic test system that makes it much easier for us to automatically test against Windows services rather than just SAMR testing against itself. Lots of build system changes. There's been major changes in our build over the last couple of years and a lot within the last year. And I think very importantly, we've had a big expansion of production in deployments. So it's now really a frequent occurrence that new production sites turn up on the IRC channel to ask us questions or ask for assistance. It's been really good. So as far as the actual changes to the source code, we did break a new record in the last year. We have more than 10,000 commits in the last year went into the SAMR source code tree in total, which is really quite incredible when you think about it. That means that the people, most of the people in this room, have on average committed more than 25 changes a day, every day, for last year. Which is really quite an incredible development rate from the people that you see here, because we have quite a small team. Most of the developers, most of the people who've done those commits are sitting here today. And I think that milestone is something that really deserves a round of applause to all of the people. It's been steadily increasing. 2 years ago, the average was a bit over 8,000. Last year, the average was a bit over 9,000. We broke the 10,000 mark in the last year. The record holder in the last year was once again Gunther. So, Gunther, where are you? Ooh, there. Closely followed by Volker. Gunther just beat Volker to post on the maximum number of commits in the last year. So, congratulations to Volker as well. Really nice. So fantastic work, really. We had 95 developers contribute in the last year, which is also more than usual. Most of course commits come from a few core team members, but it's good to see the expansion out. We've had a lot more commits from outside of the core team, which has been great. Over the last year, more than 830,000 lines of code have changed. Some of that is double counted when it gets moved around within the tree. But that's just a raw diff stat, and of course diff stat is, you know, it's full of lies and statistics and all that sort of stuff. 6,300 source files have changed, which is twice as many source files as we actually have. That's because things have moved around an awful lot. And also I'd like to mention another milestone. At the end of this year, December 2011, will mark the 20-year point in SAMR development. So next year we should have the 20 years of SAMR type talk, I think, because that will have passed the 20-year mark. Okay, so I'd like to talk a bit about the development process. These two photos here embody what for developers, particularly developers working on the Active Directory code for SAMR 4, is the highlight of the year, the most important time of the year. And this is the Active Directory Plugfest, which we've held for the last couple of years in Redmond on Microsoft campus. And you'll notice a number of people with Microsoft badges here this year at Microsoft on their name tags. Microsoft has been cooperating with us very well on the development of the Active Directory features in SAMR 4. And one of the key features of that has been this Plugfest that we hold each year, where SAMR developers go up to Redmond after the SDC event in San Jose, and we spend a week, a very, very intensive week, working together on problems and the on bugs and features in the SAMR 4 code. The particular feature we were concentrating on at this last Plugfest was the read-only domain controller. And as you know, we succeeded in that. We now have read-only domain controller support, which required some quite subtle interactions between Microsoft domain controllers and SAMR domain controllers. But I'd like to point out a couple of cute features of these photos. On the left, you see Hong Wei from Microsoft. He's the main one that I tend to work with, and so that's Hong Wei and myself working together on features of SAMR 4. But there's also a microphone sitting in the middle here, there. And that microphone is another SAMR 4 developer, Andrew Bartlett, who came in remotely. His wife had just had a baby and he decided to stay home. Instead, he got up very early in the morning and telecommuted to Redmond each morning to work with the Active Directory Plugfest. It was a lot of fun. And you can see there's the, all the SAMA team members who are up at the conference, and we see Andrew sitting there as well on my shoulder. That's the microphone sitting on my shoulder, which was a lot of fun. It worked surprisingly well, actually. We shared our screens, so he could see everything we were pitch typing, and with a microphone and our Mumble voiceover IP set up. Mumble is another thing that we've adopted in the last year. It's a free software, of course, a voiceover IP server. Those of you who haven't used it, really should have a look at it. It's a bit like IRC, but for voice, and very different from having something like a conference call. It's been an extremely productive tool that we've been using. Anyway, so that's how we get our work done. So what have we actually done? Well, read-only domain controller support has, as I mentioned, been the major effort in the last year. We wanted to support it in both directions, and we did achieve the bidirectional support. So what I mean by that is both support SAMA being a read-only domain controller in a domain where the primary domain controllers, or the other domain controllers, are Microsoft Windows domain controllers, and also having Windows being an RODC in a SAMA domain. Both of those, I think, are very important use cases. And one of the reasons why we put so much effort into this, and we had this as the key feature we were aiming for at the last Plugfest, was to make it easier for you guys, the audience here, to try SAMA 4, to adopt it. And so I wanted to explain to you a little bit about the scenario that of adoption of SAMA 4. Active Directory is usually something fairly central to your organization. Your directory really matters. If you screw up your directory, it can bring down your business. And so people are understandably quite nervous about trying a new implementation of Active Directory. And I imagine many of you are thinking that, you know, do I want to switch over to SAMA 4's Active Directory implementation in my 20,000 person company? What if it goes wrong? Well, the way we can answer that, there's two answers. When we first supported Active Directory, it was very much a leap of faith for anyone to adopt it. And as Matthew knows, as being one of the first production adopter of SAMA 4. Because when we first had Active Directory support in SAMA, as a domain controller, what you had to do was run a tool called Vampire. And that tool was a rather strange name, really. It sucked the blood out of a Windows domain controller, if you like, that's why the term Vampire, sucked all the information out of it, and then populated a SAMA domain controller, and then you would turn off the Windows domain controller and you would switch to SAMA. Okay? Now, if when you then switch to SAMA, right, it doesn't work immediately. You turn it on, it doesn't work, it crashes. What do? You're fine. You go back and you turn back on your Windows domain controller and you say, well, that trial didn't work out so fine, you know, try again in 6 weeks' time. That's okay. But what if it partly worked? What if you switched over to SAMA 4 as being your domain controller and you didn't notice a problem until the next day or the next week? Right? What happens there? Let's make this more interactive for the audience. For those who are system administrators in the audience who administer an Active Directory domain, you've just done that. You've vampired your Windows domain controller. You've got your 10,000 users, 10,000 machines out there. Right? You've switched over to the leap of faith, switched over to SAMA 4, and then something went wrong. What do you do if after a week you realise it was bad news?
After the panic stage.
Sorry, after the panic dies down, they've resuscitated you off the floor, and you're then given the task, maybe you're the new sysadmin after the last month being followed, and you're coming to clean up the mess. What's the problem? The problem is that a directory in a modern organisation is not a static thing. It's constantly changing, right? Typical change rate might be one change every 2 seconds, right? Something in the directory changes, something fairly minor usually changes, but something changes in a large domain. It might be several times a second, once every few seconds, once every 10 minutes, depends on the size of your domain. Now, so that means that something has changed in that last week or that last day. Well, if you just restore from backups, all of those changes are gone. Were those changes important? You don't know. You have no way of knowing exactly what has changed in that last week, so you have really no way of recovering those changes, right? And that was the problem with our first version. And so The first answer we had to that was that what we needed was a replication system. We needed to implement DRS replication. And last year, that was the main thing we were telling you about, because we had achieved bidirectional DRS replication at Sandra XP last year. And that meant that what you could do is you could leave your Windows domain controller alive, you could join the Sandra domain controller to domains, and they started replicating to and from each other. Right? That's great. And then if the Sandra domain controller misbehaved, then you could turn it off and your Windows domain controller is still there. And that was a big improvement. So this time last year, that is what allowed us to start getting more production users, because people were able to join to a domain, have replication, and still have the Windows domain controller there as a fallback, right? But there's still a problem. If you're the sort of nervous person about trying this new technology, then what if Sandra did something nasty to the domain? Because the Sandra domain controller has write access on the Windows domain controller. It can send changes bidirectionally. That's the point of bidirectional replication. So a bug in Sandra 4 could mean that it could corrupt your existing Active Directory domain controls. So we still had a problem as far as people trying this new unproven software. And this was one of the reasons why we concentrated so much on the RODC support, because the RODC, the R in RODC, the read-only, that is enforced by the existing domain controller, the existing Windows domain controller. So you can put in a Sandra 4 domain controller as a read-only replica, try it, and if you don't like it, it has changed nothing. It has not written anything back to the domain, because it can't. Right? You cannot write back to your other domain controllers. And that's a really important step, because it allows people, I hope the people in this audience, to go back to your organisations where you have Active Directory and now install a Sandra 4 RODC and try it. And report bugs, see how it works, put it in your branch offices, have it as an additional domain controller, see how well it works, and grow confidence in it. Once you have enough confidence in it, then you might try to rewrite domain control with replication, and then you might move on to having just a Sandra domain controller. Thank you.
I just need to confess on Apache
Conduit, which you have a multi-domain forest. Right, at the moment, that's the main feature we want for next year. Right? So Matthew says, right now, we don't have a multi-domain forest support in Sandra 4, and that is a glaring deficiency. We think it is reasonable to release 4.0 without that, as I'll be talking about later. But it is the main focus that we're looking at this year, as far as the Active Directory service support, is ensuring that we have multi-domain forest support, because in some organisations that would be it would stop the deployment of Sandra 4 because they have multiple domains in their forest, and you have to support all of those domains. You have to have replication between the multiple domains. You have to do global catalog properly. You sort of fake up global catalog at the moment. Okay, so that's why we concentrated so much on RODC support. The next big one in the last year that we've worked on is based on feedback from users. And this is why it's been so important to have production deployments of Sandra as a domain controller, because those production deployments give us feedback on what is hard. And the number one complaint in installing and configuring Sandra was DNS, which wasn't what we were really expecting initially. When we were first working on it, we thought DNS was going to be relatively easy. I mean, there's a lot of DNS entries for a domain controller, but we didn't think it would be that hard. Well, it turned out to be much, much harder to configure than what most people expected. How many of you have set up Kerberized Dynamic DNS? A few? Yeah? Who enjoyed the process? Right. So, sorry, it's a quirk of personality, I guess. Okay, so it is difficult. It is difficult to set up. And so what we decided to do, there was a decision point we had to come to in this process. We've faced this problem before of external software not quite doing what we needed it to do. For example, we needed an LDAP server to Active Directory, and we ended up doing our own LDAP server because we found it was too difficult to adapt to the Open LDAP server to do exactly what we needed. And similarly, we've done our own, you know, implementations of other protocols. But DNS, we needed to decide, were we going to do our own DNS server to overcome this problem, or were we going to work with the Bind9 developers? And that was made a little bit more difficult by the nature of the Bind9 project. How many of you have worked on the Bind project or worked with the Bind9 developers? Any of you? Yeah, okay. It's an unusual project. If you look at their website, the isc.org, they're sort of a consulting company, and it's, as a free software project, it's rather unusual because there is no source code control tree you can just check out. Their CVS is not public, right? You can't actually see the developments going on. You just wait for 6 months or a year for the new release to come out, right? It's a cathedral-style project. And you can buy access to their source code control system. So you can pay them a certain amount of money and gain read access to read their source code, but you don't get it by default, which is really unusual for a free software project, particularly one at the heart of the free software stack. I mean, a DNS server is pretty fundamental these days in any organisation. And so I was not at all certain we'd be able to work with the Bind developers to get the changes needed in. I wrote them a fairly long and technical emails explaining the issues that we had, and I was surprised by the very positive responses. They organised us to get CVS access. I also had some very long phone calls with a couple of their core developers, talking to them about the free software development process, and talking about how they can move their project to be more open. And in fact, they are now moving towards, not just because of discussions themselves, because of discussions they've had with lots of groups, they are moving towards being much more open. And hopefully they will have an open source code tree available for everyone to read soon, open submission, patch submission process, etc., which is great. So we worked with them. I spent about 3 or 4 months of working solidly on Bind9, and the end result was a set of about 47 patches, I think, over 40 patches, I think it was 47 in total, that got accepted into the Bind 9.8.0 release. That's a very slow patch rate compared to what we do on Samba. That's largely a result of, you know, even if you're an experienced developer, it takes a long time to get up to speed with a new code base. It's easier to write your own code than it is to fix somebody else's, particularly something as sophisticated as the Bind9 DNS server. So anyway, those patches, 40 patches, achieved a number of key features. One of them is that it makes it much less error-prone to configure and deploy Bind9 with the necessary Kerberos support that we need for Active Directory. It gives better error messages when it does go wrong, and it's much less likely to go wrong in the first place, both as a client and a server. Unfortunately, it hasn't 9.8.0, it's been out for a few months, but it isn't as yet in all the standard distros. So, for example, Natty Narwhal, the latest Ubuntu release, doesn't have 9.8.0 in it yet, but I'm hoping that that will change. I don't know when Red Hat is considering, do you know what all this considering the 9.8 is in it? Yeah. Anyway, for the moment, you should move to 9.8 because it is a huge improvement. It will save yourself a lot of frustration. There are a lot less bugs in the DNS Active Directory support, and it's really worthwhile. But the big change we made was we added support for loadable modules in Bind9. Now, if you've worked with Bind9 before, you'll know that they have had something called DLZ, dynamically loadable zones, for a while, where you can load in, for example, a MySQL database, or you can load in an LDAP backend or an Oracle database backend. How many of you have worked with those sort of things in Bind? Larger sites, often very large sites, work with these sort of things, so David has it and Simo. That's really used for sites, particularly the sites that have millions of domains that they're hosting. They might use an SQL database rather than the standard database backend. The problem with that local module system was that the code had to ship as part of Bind, which meant if you had a bug fix for your SQL database backend, that bug fix wouldn't get to users until 6 months or a year's time when the next major release of Bind happened. Right? It had to compile as part of the whole Bind system. It wasn't a separate SO which was loaded and compiled separately. So what we did was we added support for that. So the Samba 10 contributed patches to make it possible for Bind backends to be loaded separately. and we can separately distribute them, and we now build a backend as part of the Samba build process, and that backend can be loaded directly into the Bind9 server, and gives it the capability to store its database in an Active Directory compatible fashion. It stores it, in fact, directly into the Samba 4 LDAP LDB database. And that means we can offer full ACL access control list support, we can do proper Kerberos pack authentication on updates, we can basically completely control and replicate all of the changes going into the DNS. Some of you may not realise that you can actually do DNS operations against an Active Directory domain controller using LDAP. You can do LDAP queries, you can do LDAP stores, all of it is exposed over LDAP, as most Active Directory is. And it also works with DRS replication, domain controller to domain controller replication. That works, that replication process includes all the DNS records. So there is the normal DNS replication process using the DNS protocols, but there is also the DRS replication for domain controller to domain controller. And we can now support all of that. That is still in very rough state. Our main aim is to get the patches in for 9.8.0, and now we're still working on the module in Samba to take full advantage of that, but the key features, we have at least demonstrated them, but it's not quite ready for production use. Okay, so that's what's been happening with Bind9 integration. Next one I thought I'd mention is something that's really just for developers. Samba project is almost 20 years old, and one of the main aims of the Samba project is, would you believe, integration with Windows, allowing us to talk to Windows servers. Well, over these 20 years, up till now, we haven't had a way of automatically testing that Samba works with Windows. And there have been embarrassing moments when we've put out patches that just don't work for some versions of Windows. That's because there's so many different versions of Windows, and most of the Samba developers don't run Windows. Most Samba developers run Linux or BSD or some other free Unix on their laptops and on their servers at home. We support people running Windows. We don't run a lot ourselves. So sometimes we don't notice if we break compatibility with Windows. So we needed to solve that. We needed to solve it in a way that was easy and that wasn't too tedious for a developer. Because when Samba first started, the very first release, just under 20 years ago, was 2,000 lines of code. It didn't have any features. And so it was very easy to test that all of those features work. Because if you've only got three features, then testing that all work is pretty easy. Testing that all the features of Samba work these days is a mammoth task. If you wanted to have something that tested every SMB.conf option and made sure it works manually, you can imagine how long that would take. There's hundreds of options. It would take you many, many weeks to get through testing all of them. So we needed test automation. And of course, the Samba team has been into test automation for a long time, but it's test automation against ourselves. We've been having Samba testing against Samba. So on our build farm, our Samba client library tested against our Samba server. Then what the developer did was the developer also tested our client library against Windows, and then we assumed that if A was compatible with B, and if B was compatible with C, that we hoped that A was compatible with C. You get the idea? That was the basic theory behind our testing system. The problem is that testing isn't always community. It doesn't work like that in all cases. There can be bugs where A isn't compatible with C. And so WinTest is our new system, which is a Python-based scripting system, and it allows us to script Windows. So it's a system that allows us to say, automatically start up a Windows virtual machine, get it into a particular known state, make it become a domain controller in a Samba domain, do replication, create a share, create a user. We can do most things you can do on Windows, we can do via the WinTest scripting system. So that has been really helpful in the development of the domain controller features. And I'm hoping it'll be more widely used. Only a few of the Samba team members are using it so far, but I think it is important for the future of Samba, given the complexity of what we're trying to achieve these days, that we do have easier ways of testing Samba directly against lots of Windows versions. So WinTest currently tests against Windows XP, Windows 2000, 2003, 2008, 2008 R2, and for each of those, as a where applicable, as a domain controller, as a read-only domain controller in both directions, Amber being the domain controller, Windows being the domain controller, etc. So lots and lots of combinations, and it takes about 20 minutes or half an hour for it to run through those tests, which is a lot faster than you can do it by hand. So if you're looking at SAM development, then definitely something worth looking into. So what we were aiming to do as part of this was to create something that tested the how-to. How many of you have seen the SAM before how-to? Quite a few? Right. So the SAM before how-to, somebody who's never been through it before would typically take a couple of days to run through that how-to, if you're not familiar with it. If you've done it a dozen times before, it might take you maybe an hour or two to get all the way through it. The SAM before how-to can be completely tested by a wind test. It basically runs through all the steps, except it runs a lot more combinations. The SAM before how-to just assumes you have a Windows system. It doesn't care what version. With wind test, what it does is it tries the how-to, but with every version of Windows. We found some quite interesting subtleties when we were testing with, say, 2003 and other versions of Windows. Okay, auto-build. This one is, again, a developer feature. A very developer focus in this talk today. Auto-build tries to solve a problem that developers tend to be overconfident by their nature. I mean, geeks in general tend to be confident about technology, and programmers particularly so. So the usual thing is that little change couldn't break anything. You know, I'm sure that change is okay. And the problem is that that statement is right most of the time. Let's pick a number. Let's say it's right 80% of the time. Well, that means that it's wrong 20% of the time. And we had 10,000 patches committed to Samba in the last year. Now, take 20% of those 10,000 patches, that would mean 2,000 of them introduce some bug. And the bug may not even be evident to the person who's doing the commit, because they're building in the SAMBA 3 file server build, somebody else is building in the SAMBA 4 Active Directory build, somebody else is using the SAMBA 3 WAF build, whatever. And there might be subtleties between those where you get breakage. Or even worse, the change is perfectly fine for SAMBA, but it breaks external users of the Talloc library. It breaks external the build of the standalone LDB, the standalone TEvent. It breaks integration with OpenChange. Where's Brad? How often? So that fully solved that one. We're still breaking OpenChange occasionally.
Yes, it's Scala and Redmond.
Still a problem. So auto-build was a way that we were trying to solve this problem. And what it basically does is every time you do a commit into Samba now, the commit doesn't go straight into the master tree that I'm sure you all know and love. The commit instead goes into something called auto-build, which then does the build and test of all of those different variants. It builds and tests all the standalone libraries. It tries the install. It checks that when it creates the tarball, that the tarball is then buildable and installable, which means we know that releases will actually work. It checks that the full test suite for SAMBA 4 and SAMBA 3 all works and passes. It checks a whole lot of single checks, lots and lots of validation. And that process takes around an hour on a fast machine. We've got a fast machine here in Germany, hosted at CERNET, a 24 CPU machine, which is able to do the build quite quickly. It can build SAMBA in about 30 seconds or so. Which is really quite quick with parallel build. So those of you who sat and watched the build slowly pressing through, that's roughly a 30-second build these days on that machine, which is great. So that auto-build has really saved our sanity a lot. It's made things a lot easier. It has led to some frustrations, because sometimes it can be difficult to work out why something is failing in auto-build. And that's something we still need to improve a bit, but it is at least better than not... than just getting the breakage into the tree and then all the other developers having their work stalled. Because with an average of more than 25 commits a day, if the tree breaks, if you quickly cascade onto all the other commits that would be happening that day and the next day. So it cascades and affects other developers and slows everyone down. So auto-build, despite the additional hour that it adds to the commit process, you don't have to steer it away through, of course, unless you feel like watching it. but it really has made a much smoother development process. Okay, so that's what I built. The build system itself has changed a lot in the last year. As you know, we started on a WAF-based build system, which is a Python scripting system, last year, and we've expanded that a lot in the last year. There's been a huge amount of work done by Gunter and by others on the Samba 3 build using WAF, and we've moved up to a top-level build system that is able to build all of Samba, all of the Samba 3 components and all of the Samba 4 components. This is part of our attempt to make just the Samba project in the future, rather than having these two sub-projects, Samba 3 and Samba 4, we hope it will just be Samba again, having all of the features of Samba 3 and all of the features of Samba 4. And the separated build was a bit of a barrier to that. And so moving to a top-level build, we're hoping is going to smooth the way towards that, that final release. We've also been able to add some new advanced features. For example, automatic library version handling, automatic symbol versioning of libraries, detection of duplicate conflicting symbols, these types of things, which we weren't able to do, or at least we weren't able to do easily, using the previous build system. So, for example, if a developer changes the prototype of a function, and that function is in one of our public libraries, then the build system will refuse to build until they have modified the library version to indicate the change. And this makes life much better for us exporting external libraries to other users. The Samba ecosystem is much broader than just a file print and authentication server these days. Samba is used by other projects. And one of the key users is actually got Julian and Brad here from OpenChange. And they use a lot of our libraries, and other projects are using the Samba libraries. If you send mail from Evolution, for example, you're using the OpenChange system, which is, uses pieces of Samba when you're talking to an Exchange server. It was quite a pain to ensure that those libraries didn't break. The new build system has made that much, much easier. It's also provided us with a guide towards the merge process between Samba 3 and Samba 4. We didn't, this time last year, we knew there was a problem with two functions in the code having the same name, but two different implementations. We might have, for example, a debug function that prints a debug message to a log file, a Samba log file, right? That debug function, we knew that there were two versions of it in the code, and we knew that we really had to move to one version in the code in order to be able to properly integrate the two development branches. But we didn't know how many of those functions there were. We had no way of knowing the size of the problem. Because we couldn't size the problem, it just looked insurmountable. It was just this huge problem facing us. How are we going to overcome the differences between these two source trees, trying to make it into a single tree again? And we made some modifications to the build system to give us a way of quantifying that problem. So when we first ran it, we found that there were 1,230 something symbols that were in common. So it's 1,200 functions that were duplicated in two different parts of the Samba source tree. And that's a problem, because if you have two different functions of the same name that do different things, then you can't have them both linked into the same program, otherwise you end up with bizarre errors at either compile time or runtime. And we did get some really bizarre errors when we were first doing this. And so by using the new build system, we were able to quantify the size of the problem and say, okay, we're going to take on these ones, then these ones, then these ones. And due to some particular methods by Andrew Bartlett over the last few months, it's now down to, I think, 12, is it?
Something like that.
It's now 12 symbols that are left out of the 12 original. He's reduced by 99% the functions that are overlapping between the two, and we should have it down to zero fairly shortly. And that has been a huge step forward in Samba development, and I hope it will be one of the major things that leads to us just being the Samba project again, rather than identifying a Samba 4 and Samba 3. So that's been a really big thing for developers. Okay, production users. We've had a lot more production users in the last year. We've also had our first production users with multi-DC replication. And in some ways, you might say that's the first production uses with real Active Directory, because in some ways, you could say that Active Directory is defined by having a replicating LDAP, multi-master replicating LDAP system. Unless you actually are doing replication between the domain controllers, you might say, is it really Active Directory or not? And we finally supported bidirectional replication last year, and the first few brave souls installed it and been running it in production. And I would mention to you that if you want to run it in production, you do get one big advantage if you start now and if you decide to adopt it now. You get a lot of attention from developers. For example, just about 2 months ago, a new user popped up on the IRC channel. I won't give you his name. He works for a government department in the US, and they're a bit secretive about what the computer systems they have. Anyway, this government department decided to adopt SAMPA4 domain controllers, multiple DCs replicating. If he's got four SAMPA4 domain controllers. They migrated. They originally had Windows 2003 domain controllers. Then they used the process of adding one SAMPA4 read-write domain controller, replicating to the Windows one, and they ran it as a pair of them for a few weeks. But he left the FSMO, the Flexible Single Master Operator, roles on the Windows 2003 domain controller at first, and then moved those roles slowly onto the SAMPA domain controller. So SAMPA became the RID master, became the schema master, became the all of the other different master roles in the domain. Then he added another SAMPA4 domain controller. So we had two SAMPA4 domain controllers and one Windows 2003 domain controller. You can imagine that Windows 2003 domain controller getting worried at this stage. It's outnumbered by SAMPA in that organization. It was great. It's a site with a few thousand users. It's not a huge site, just a few thousand users and the government department. And then he's now on four SAMPA4 domain controllers spread across the organisation, and he's turned off the Windows 2003 domain controller and going just SAMPA4, which is great. So when he turned up on the IRC channel and he asked me about an issue he'd hit, I immediately wanted to really help him, because developers in the free software land world, and really the proprietary world too, are often very passionate about their code, particularly new code. Right. So if you're using new features of SAMPA, you'll find that SAMPA developers will go out of their way to help. So he was rather surprised when I was quite happy to ring him from Australia and ring this place in the US and spend several hours on the phone with tech support. And then his manager walked into the office and he introduced me to his manager. We were chatting away about this, and the manager would be quite surprised. You've got this free tech support from Australia on the phone for any issues that might crop up. So the reason we lavish so much time on people, and this is why you should get involved now, because you get all this free tech support, is that these first few production users are extremely valuable to us, because they find the bugs that our testing hasn't found. Because there's always more bugs, right? And production users do unusual things. So for example, this particular production user has all his systems running as virtual machines. And what he does is at 2 a.m. each night, he power cycles, he wants to back up into his virtual machines. So what he does, because he knows he's got multiple domain controllers, he knows he can shut down any one of them. So the way he does his backup is he has a cron job that shuts down each virtual machine in turn, backs up the underlying image, and then starts up the image again. Right? And you think that'd be great. Well, that exposed a bug in SAMPA. When it started up, just occasionally, it crashed on startup, or replication failed. And the key problem was a missing feature. It was a feature that we knew we needed to do, but we'd put off because we didn't think it would be particularly high priority. And that feature is something that, if you've dealt with Active Directory for a while, you think is actually a fairly fundamental feature. It's conflict records. Anyone tell me what conflict records are in Active Directory? Yeah, Matthew knows about it, yeah.
If you try to modify on 2DC the same record.
Yeah. Right. So if you try, imagine you have two domain controllers in the domain, and you simultaneously create the same username on both of those domain controllers. Right? You create this new user called Matthew. Okay? On both of these domain controllers at the same time. Both of them may allow you to create the record, but then, of course, you've got these two records that conflict. They'll try and replicate to each other. So one will replicate to the other, and it'll say, well, I've already got that record. Well, SAMPA failed that replication. It said, I won't accept that record. right? Because you can't have two records of the same name, okay? The same DN, the same same account name, and all that. And so we failed replication. That then stalled replication completely, which meant those two domain controllers were no longer able to replicate to each other. So what happened then? Well, then what would happen? Because they're now disconnected, you've got more and more of these records building up the same on both domain controllers. And the reason you've got more and more is there's a lot of objects in Active Directory that get created automatically, periodically, particularly by printers. A lot of print systems will create a print queue object in Active Directory as an LDAP record on a regular basis. And which domain controller they choose to create upon is pretty much random. So they may end up creating an object with the same name on multiple systems. And so the event of this queue of objects and this blocking of replication, so you have no replication between your domain controllers, which means you no longer have redundancy. And so I worked with them on this, and we diagnosed the problem, and of course we added what's called conflict records, which is where it automatically renames one of the records based on a set of rules as to which record is the newer. And there's a standard set of rules in Active Directory for how you determine conflict resolution between record names. And so we now have conflict record resolution. And he was delighted. We put it into place and the problems were solved. The original problem happened that reboot at 2 a.m. The actual issue wasn't the rebooting of the Samba server. It was the rebooting of the DNS servers. He had his two DNS servers, and those DNS servers were also on separate virtual machines, and they were also backed up, rebooted and backed up at 2 a.m. For a short period of time, during that process, he lost DNS connectivity. And during the loss of DNS connectivity, that separated the two domain controllers. They were across a WAN link. And that separated the two domain controllers enough that it started creating redundant duplicate records in your conflicts, and that broke replication. So it was a case that we just had to come across in our testing. And it's not the sort of thing you think to write a test case for, even though it's obvious in retrospect. And this is where production users are so valuable. So I would encourage you, you know, install and use Samba 4 now. You'll probably find that if you hit a technical issue, you'll probably find one of the Samba 4 developers will be very happy to provide you with lavish amounts of technical support to solve any issues that may come up. And you'll be really helping the Samba project, because these sorts of issues are very difficult to find during standard testing that we do. It's the sort of thing we really need production users to find for us. Okay, so what's next? Well, my own view, and this is something we need to come to a consensus on within the Samba team, is that before 4.0 release, there's not a lot to do. The principal thing we need to do is to choose a mechanism for providing integration of the Samba 3 file and print server into Samba 4. And in some ways, we're in the fortunate position of having two possible solutions. And both of those solutions will be presented later in this conference. Andrew's going to be talking about one, and Volker about another. And both of those solutions are viable. And so both of them may well end up being a choice, or we may go with the usual solution when you can't make a decision, which is to put both in. And that's a very distinct possibility that both will be available in 4.0 release. But it is the fun. We had a solution this time last year, which I presented, the S3 compat solution that I presented. You may remember my talk from last year, the S3 compat talk, where I talked about the way of trying to, I demonstrated, for example, printing in Samba 4 using the Samba 3 print server and the Samba 3 file server working in Samba 4. So that solution from last year, as I explained at the time, that involves a lot of trickery. And most of the trickery involved in that solution was because we had these 1,200 symbols. We didn't know how many symbols it was at the time. We now know that we had about 1,200 symbols that conflicted. So we had to use some very tricky link-up tricks to allow us to integrate Samba 3 and Samba 4 in a cohesive manner. Now we're down to just 12 symbols, and they're fairly innocuous symbols at that, and we'll probably be down to zero soon. That whole system is much easier and cleaner, a much nicer approach. So I hope it's something that we'll look at as a way of solving this problem. But we also have the alternative solution, which has been around for a bit longer, which is the Frankie solution. And that reached the milestone a couple of days ago. Frankie is now automatically tested. We now need to do a make test it tests the Franking solution to make sure that it works, which means one of the main problems with Franking in the past has been it's been a bit complex to set up, and it's sometimes broken, that system. Now we have it as part of standardized main tests, it's always tested in auto-build. Hopefully that system will also keep working into the future. Okay, so release itself, we can also do more documentation, our how-tos need updates. There's a whole lot of inconsistent documentation, just plain out of date or missing documentation. We need to get that fixed, that's a big effort. After that, I think we should do a release. I think we should call it 4.0. And there are missing features. I mean, we don't have all the features of Microsoft Active Directory. But I think if we wait until we have all the features of Microsoft Active Directory, the only way we manage to do that is to put some sort of time freeze. We'll need Doctor Who to come in and freeze Redmond to stop them adding new features. Because it's a moving target. And what we need, I think what we've got so far, the 4.0 release, we need to get out, bless it as being an official release, a stable release, with our current feature set. And then keep working towards 4.1 and releases after that, adding more features. But given the fact that the feedback we've had so far from our production users has been, they've been very, very pleasantly surprised by how well it works. The production users have been really very happy with Xamarin 4 as a domain controller. So I think we should get it out there and call it 4.0. And so that's one of our tasks over the next maybe 6 months. We don't have an exact time yet. Is to get that release out. So what do we need to do post-release after that? Multi-domain support, real ID forests, that's an absolutely key one. And that I think is be the one of the biggest technical challenges in the next year, development challenges, is making sure that we can support multiple domains in a forest properly. There's some pieces of that works already, there's some pieces of it that don't. We need to do a lot more testing of it and fill in the missing features and make it work. Because so many organisations do have more than one domain in the forest, and supporting only a single domain is just not good enough for 4.1. Syswall replication is another big one. Group policy objects are extremely important in Active Directory. They're often one of the key features as to why people use Active Directory in the first place. At the moment, when you have multiple SAML 4 domain controllers, and there will be multiple copies of Syswall, which contains all of the group policy objects. At the moment, the only thing you can do is to externally replicate those using something like rsync or conjoin. We really should integrate that replication inside Samba so that it automatically replicates between the different domain controllers. So that's really an important feature, and that is relying on some work that Seth Metzmarker has been working on, a feature called DCRDC pipes. Once we have that, we're hoping to be able to get that replication built in fairly quickly. The next big feature, I think, technical challenge for the next year is scaling to large numbers of users and DCs. At the moment, SAMR 4 is quite quick as a small domain, up to maybe 10,000s or a few tens of thousands of records. If you scale to hundreds of thousands of records, it gets very slow. And don't even try to scale to millions of records. It's just not reasonable in its time. It gets far too slow. We know how to fix that. We have a quite detailed plan on how we're going to make that scale really well to millions of users and thousands of domain controllers. We just haven't done it yet. And I hope that next year that I'll be able to talk about our efforts to scale SAMR 4 to really large scales and to make it really fast for large numbers of users. We hope we can get that done by then. So they're the key features that I'd like to get to for next year. For more information, I'd encourage you to go to run through the SAMR 4 how-to to try it, to maybe think about a production deployment, maybe as an RODC or as a rewrite DC, and to give feedback, to tell us if it worked, if it didn't work, to tell us what else needs to be done. And of course there's videos up there on that link there, you can see giving examples of how SAMR 4 works. So that's pretty about it, that's what's happened in the last year, so thank you for listening, and any questions?
Thank you.
Can I try to talk this course?
Yeah, sure.
So for the auto build, really cool, but 10,000 submissions in an hour per test. It's only $700 in a year. You must serialize, or you must parallelize something and not strictly serialize it. How do you have a scale going forward?
Right. The way that works is when somebody does a commit, they usually commit more than one commit at one time. So they're really committing a change set, which might consist of, say, 6 or 8 patches. And what AutoBuild does is it actually jumps forward and commits that as a group and tests it as a group. We were considering testing the individual patches, making sure the individual ones worked, but partly because of the time it would take partly because requiring developers to ensure that every intermediate patch within their change set passes all tests, we thought that was too strict a requirement. There was a debate about it within the team. We thought that was a bit too strict a requirement for when we were first deploying AutoBuild, that we could consider in the future. Although if we did test, say, the 8 at once, it wouldn't actually take 8 times as long because we could run all those 8 in parallel, because most of that hour, it's not using all 24 CPUs. Most of the hour is only using one of those CPUs. In fact, less than one CPU is often sleeping. So, in fact, we could test the whole bunch of patches in parallel, and it would be possible to be stricter about making sure every sub-patch within a change set passes all tests. But we haven't as yet, decided if we would do that.
It's pretty cool. I mean, is this the only project that does this kind of testing?
No, it's actually something that's been in some. It's been a standard feature of some source code control systems for quite a long time. I don't know of any other one using Git that uses this type of system. Tom Ball's Arch had this concept 15 years ago as a build system. It just wasn't widely deployed.
Actually, Finch, that Wine sort of uses a system like that. Just right. We have a human doing that because he's the only one who has given access to the paper.
Right, okay.
So we're probably the only automated one doing this.
I suspect there are other automated ones, I just can't name them. I would be very loath to claim we're the first, because I think it's unlikely we're the first.
We have internally run testing and they have a lot of commits.
Right.
Off commits.
Yeah, that's why
it's an answer that you break.
Yeah, I mean, we've had that in build time for ages, where you get an email if you break it. But what we haven't had until AutoBuild is that you can't actually commit until it works, which is a lot stricter.
Sometimes it would be a pain.
Yeah, sometimes it is a pain.
No. It's the same I make it more times than I guess mentioned. Have a good luck doing that.
Yes. But by the way, about 10% of submissions to AutoBuild fail. Something like that. Because we record them all. I keep all the logs of every submission. And so I could name names. Be nice to me or I will. My name's on the list, by the way.
That's what I'm going to
say. IPv6. Yes. I haven't done anything towards IPv6 in the last year. And my apologies for that. It just hasn't been a priority for my own work. Other people have done some work towards it. SAMP3 has done a lot more work on IPv6 than SAMP4 has.
And we have SAMP4, of course.
We're starting to inherit some of that with the merge work. There's a little bit of stuff that Andrew did that inherits some of the. For example, we now use the interfaces code that detects the interfaces. We adopted the SAMP3 interfaces detection code, which had more IPv6 stuff in it. And so, in fact, SAMP4 now does do more IPv6 stuff than it did 2 weeks ago. But that was really just because we adopted other people's good work rather than doing it ourselves, which is fine. But there's more to do. We still haven't got to the point where you feel as though you don't need to come and remind us.
And it's a walking bug, isn't it, Joe?
Yeah, I was just about to say that. I did tell David that it was a walking bug after release.
Duh.
The other nice thing is apparently Andrew is about to get IPv6 on his home.
At that point,
you and I should work together and go through it and fix the pieces in the.
Good. Yeah, I got IPv6, yeah.
Excellent. Because, of course, IPv4 is a legacy protocol now.
So is SMB.
Yeah, so it will be fixed before Vision 4.
Oh, it's that dog. It's not a bus break. Right, okay, thank you very much.
Now it's time for our lunch break. We will reconvene at 1:30. After 1:30, so I hope we do probably on time. Have a meal.
Thank you for your talk.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All the present.
Thank you very much.
Would you mind copying your slides?